You might call them Olympic rings of fire, hoops that people have to jump on both sides of the Canada-US border. First, it was Amy Goodman who was aggressively questioned by Canadian Border Services as she tried to enter Canada. And what are you going to talk about? They kept asking and asking. And this week it was Marla Wren who was the target of interrogation. She was traveling the opposite way. And who do you know and what are you going to say? Were the questions this time. Two border services, one shared obsession, the Olympic Rings of Fire. Marla Wren is co-chair of the StopWar.ca coalition and active in opposition to the Olympics. She joins me by phone today. Good morning, Marla.
Good morning.
Now, you were on your way to the United States. Why were you going to the U.S.?
Well, I had been invited, I was going as a member of the Olympic Resistance Network because we had been invited to go to Portland, Oregon, where there had been four different community events that had been organized, designed around sharing information, letting people know what the impacts that we're seeing happening in Vancouver with the coming of the Olympics, and also the ways that people are organizing to resist those impacts, and as well as to extend an invitation to the convergence that's happening here from February 10th to the 16th. And ways that people, if they can't actually cross the border and come to Canada, ways that they could support and have solidarity events going on in Portland.
And have you tried to go to the U.S. before?
Yes, actually, I attempted to go once in October, near the end of October, similarly to go to a book fair, a Seattle Anarchist Book Fair. We've been invited to do a workshop there. So I was traveling over with one other person, and we were refused at that time as well. The official reason then was that we were carrying 10 T-shirts, and so they were considered to be commercial merchandise. And so that was what happened in October.
And what exactly happened this week when you tried to enter the United States?
Well, I was traveling over on public transportation. So as it is required when you go through the border on a bus, that everybody gets off and actually goes through. So I got off the bus and was standing in line. I was actually the fourth person in line. And before I even got up to the front, I was asked to come over to a wicket that just opened. And it was very shortly in that the initial questioning that I became clear that there was quite a long list of things that must have been on my passport, as well as the questions were directed, you know, specifically right away to who did I know in Portland, and actually was asked to write down names of who I knew. That was within the first 30 seconds of my interaction with the border guard.
So is your understanding that they had information about you and they knew some details about your political activity?
Yeah, I mean, that's based on the way that those interactions were happening. That obviously I can't know for sure, but that's definitely my sense of what happened, that that there definitely was quite a few things written on my passport, and I've never had that experience before of you know, standing there waiting while obviously this border guard was reading quite a long list of things. And the questions as they began to roll out were quite normal questions in terms of where are you going and why are you going there. But as soon as he began to ask me, you know, why I was going there, you know, and I said going to a few different community speaking events, and he said, who do you know? And I said, well, I don't know anyone. And he said, no, I think you know quite a few people there, and I want you to start writing down their names. But it was soon after that that they went through my luggage, and they were very concerned about my speaking notes. They took my speaking notes and photocopied them and asked me quite a few questions about them. And that was after that that I went through about an hour of a solid interrogation in the back room. And that was specifically all asking questions about exactly why I was going down there. Who did I know, and how were there connections between these organizations in Portland and Vancouver? And really extensive questioning about the content of what I planned to speak on while I was in Portland.
Was the purpose to get information, or was it intimidation, or a combination of both?
Oh, I really think it was a combination of both. And, you know, within the Olympic Resistance Network, because of the level of harassment that many of the activists have faced, that we've generally taken the stance of, you know, it's really not a safe idea to enter into conversations with police officers about your activities as a as an organizer around these events, mostly because it's really difficult to anticipate what they're at, like why they're asking the questions that they are. And it was something that I was very aware of while I was going through those interactions with the border guards, of just how manipulative the questioning really is. And the use of, you know, of good cops and bad cops, you know, the person who's there to help you and be friendly with you, and then the person who's grilling you with, you know, very intense questions. And all the while, you do realize that you are physically in a place that is quite dangerous, because you don't have any rights when you're at a border. And at that point, I was in American custody. And so it really is an intimidating place to be just physically once you're there.
And what did they decide in the end?
It was eventually decided that I would not be allowed into the United States based on the reason that I did not have proof of ties and equities in Canada. So meaning that I had no way to really show that I was going to not become a flight risk and decide to move to the United States. And now that is despite the fact that I am married in Canada and, you know, I have a rental agreement and all of the daily things that go on that would show that I do have a life here that I'm returning to. But what they really stuck to was the fact that I graduated in August or the end of August and I haven't been employed for the last 3 months. And so that became a source of reasoning for them that that because I didn't have a job or proof of employment for the last 3 months, that I could possibly want to, I guess, go to the United States and suck off their amazing welfare system.
And was there any indication that you shouldn't come back to the United States again? Or
Yeah, there was actually all of that final decision making was documented and put on paper, along with a series of conditions that if I attempted to re-enter the United States, there was quite a long list of things of consequences that I would be facing. Now I don't remember all of them, and I actually asked for a copy of that documentation, but was told that I wouldn't be allowed to have any because it was property of the U.S. government, and they would send a copy to the Canadian government, and that was as far as copies would go. But on there, so I don't remember everything, all of the conditions, but one of them that was on there was that if I did attempt to re-enter the United States within the next 6 months, that I would face up to 2 years in jail.
And this is reentry through normal means, going
normal,
through customs.
Yes, exactly. Sort of leaving me with a feeling that, you know, that I would be in a dangerous place, just attempting to cross the border even after that 6 month period. That that there's been something very significant that has now been attached to me in terms of a label.
Okay, so you had you finished with the U.S. customs. You returned back to Canada. What was your experience with the Canadian Border Services?
Oh, it wasn't much better. Interestingly enough, I was actually physically escorted to the Canadian side by the U.S. Border guards, who kept the possession of my cell phone, my camera, and my speaking notes, and handed them over directly to the Canadian Border Guard. They had a small conversation, and as soon as the American Border Guards left, I began a two-hour questioning period with the Canadian guards that got right to the heart of the matter. There was no sort of, you know, dilly-dallying around, you know, what my intentions were. They knew because they'd been informed, and so they designed all of their questions really specifically around, you know, what my involvement with the Olympic Resistance Network looks like, what other organizations are involved with the Olympic Resistance Network, either formally or just tangentially, you know, what kinds of connections did we have to people in Portland? And the key question that was actually asked was did I plan to recruit people to the anti-Olympics cause while I was in Portland? So it was very clear again that, you know, because of the focus of the questions, that really that their main concern was specifically about the activities of the Olympic Resistance Network and people who are involved and how we're coordinating and sharing information and organizing ourselves to resist these impacts.
So you were hit at both ends, basically.
Yeah.
Is it your sense of things that the customs services are exchanging information and cooperating with each other to stifle political resistance?
Well, yes. I mean, they actually do state that that's part of, you know, their mandate, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, how they organize the safety of the border. But what we're seeing with the coming of the Olympics is a increasing collaboration along lines of security between the two countries, and also between, like, our military forces and our regular police forces. And with the Olympics, I mean, that's actually one of the focus of conversation, just, you know, in the moments of standing around with the border guards, was them, you know, sort of bantering about what's going to be coming with the Olympics and how, you know, they're dealing with coordinating, you know, around the border situation with each other to make sure that the borders are safe. Though I have to say that the experience that I had being subjected to the kinds of questioning that I was, and in terms of the focus being on what I was saying and real concern and a lot of actual work that was done to decipher specifically the contents of my speech, that was really left with the impression that there is a tightening of the border, specifically around putting in obstacles or challenges to there being vocal and visible dissent that's coming from people, and to be able to organize that across the border. So it does, you know, especially in the context of what's happening with the Olympics and the kinds of harassment and just levels of intimidation that we're experiencing on an everyday way from our policing and security services. This seems to be one more way that the $1 billion security budget is really going towards, you know, strengthening policing services in order to prevent visible and vocal dissent.
And over the long term, do you think this means they're trying to discourage people from even getting involved in any kind of political activity?
Well, it certainly does put a chill in the air. You know, when people are new to an you know, organizing or community responses to problems that are going on around them, people are coming into those struggles and you know, the first thing they see is that there's plainclothes police officers knocking on people's doors or activists trying to go to the states that are, you know, facing, you know, 6 months in prison because of an attempt to reenter after being refused. Those are very, very serious levels of policing that really do put a chill in the air and really do attempt to, I think, prevent the effective and successful organizing from happening by simply, you know, stopping people in their tracks from even getting involved. But I think I have to say that I think in Vancouver that, you know, people are being so vocal about what is happening to them, that they're not taking this on as being a personal affront. We're seeing this happening to activists all across the board. And so the more that people can acknowledge that these activities are happening and the consequences of fear and intimidation that are coming out of them, the more that we can really overstep the intended effect, I think, that it is to have, which, as you said, is to put a chill in the air and really stop more people from coming in.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us today, Marla.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to let people know about the other side of what's happening in terms of the Olympic organizing that's not always seen in the mainstream media, but you guys really do give some great time and energy towards.
Marla Wren is co-chair of the StopWar.ca coalition and active in opposition to the Olympics.